Hello and welcome to Keyframes in Betweens, a mini podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton. With me today is Duncan.
Hello.
You almost called me Jeff. Andy, didn't you? I almost called you Andy.
And I'm sabotaging you just like Andy.
I was literally thinking in my head, like, man, I can just snap into these introductions without even thinking. And then I went ahead and introduced Andy, who's our probably most dedicated non-main host chair. Anyway, I'll do another one just in case we want to have a clean one.
Why would you want
to
clean
up? You
didn't
even get to let Jeff say hello. Or yellow, as it were.
Yellow.
We can just cut it out.
Just keep
this is amateurish.
Pretend I'm not here. Don't worry about it.
Just this is just amateurish. And speaking of amateurish, we have shows about amateurs to talk about. We are discussing probably the most discussed non-animated work on this podcast in all of its runtime, which is 2014's Aoi Hono, or Blue Blazes, which is a live-action TV show based on manga by Kazuhiko Shimamoto that he is still writing and is based on his years at the University of Osaka, where he happened to be coming up with the future founders of Gainax, plus a couple of really mouthy manga artists. And yeah, I was recommended this. I think through the anime subreddit, which does not sound like me, but it was 10 years ago, so I was a different person at that point. People are like, oh, you gotta know about this. It's such a good picture of like early otaku, like the early mainstream otaku movement and the early like explosion. And yeah, it does cover a fictionalized version of the author's self as an aspiring creator who cannot stop blocking his own shot and ceaselessly lying to everybody around him about his potential until he finally has a breakdown and acknowledges that he's alienated all of his friends and failed to achieve anything meaningful, while the people he considered his rivals have made one of the most important amateur animations of the early 1980s and would go on to make some of the most important professional animations of the mid 1990s. And yeah, I love this. I find Japanese live action TV difficult to relate to because the production values are very different than Western TV, and the standard of acting and the polish of the performances is very different from Western TV. But maybe it's just because they are constantly throwing obscure references my way, but this is one of the funniest TV shows I've ever watched, and I was very glad to just share it with y'all by trapping you into the historical context of what this autobiography is. What are y'all's impressions of Blue Blazes?
I honestly can't remember if my introduction to it was from you or if it was from just like a random YouTube clip of the, you know, Aoi Hono version of the real student film that Hideaki Anno made of himself in a tracksuit doing the Ultraman routine. And just becoming curious as to what that was. And then, you know, I probably like brought it up. You're like, oh, that's from a show. You should watch the entirety of it. And I did. And I loved it, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, the last time we talked about this. And yeah, I came back to it this time and I still love it. Like, I'm, you know, being the fake anime fan of the show, I don't have as firm a grasp on the, you know, the industry lore and all of the, you know, the interconnecting personalities, but Gainax anime, I was kind of a like collateral damage of otaku in the 90s, because I think I've probably brought it up before, but my buddy's sister was a big like fan dubber in, you know, in the 90s. So I had seen, you know, ratty VHS tapes of Evangelion when I, you know, a couple of years after it had come out, having no idea what it was. And so a lot of this is just kind of like, you know, is big nostalgia directed directly at me. And the, and also just like that you were saying, the delivery of the show is so over the top and so arch and so goofy that I gotta love it. It's like, there's not like a single naturalistic performance in the whole thing, and I think it's better for it. And yeah, so that's mine. This is just like a fun show for me. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's it We'll move to Duncan in a second, but I do think, like, you really have to credit the main actor, especially because the guy who plays Moryu Hono has to act like an absolute moron and, like, make the other weirdos seem normal in comparison, because we spend, much like my own college experience, we spend about 90% of the anime that's not, like, Hideki Anno trapped in his head hearing his, like, self bullshit about how he's actually the most talented person at the school, and if the stars align right, people will respect him for his greatness. So I just, like, Yuya Yagira, like, I can't imagine the show without him. I can't imagine the show without most of the main characters, but mm-hmm. but him especially, having to, like, take an absolute freak and make him relatable.
It's worth bearing in mind, unlike with VAs, where we have, like, a strong sense of the pedigree of people, when we have this cast in front of us, like, they're all unknowns to us, but people watching this, these people are going to be, have pedigrees there and characters and types associated with them. And Yuya Yagira, who is Hono, he's got a Cannes Best Actor Award among his things, as a 12-year-old child actor. So, like, in terms of, like, he's like a child star who's grown up and has, like, all these quite dramatic events in his personal life as well. So it's like, to us, it's just like a nobody, someone who to us is a nobody, is probably a fairly recognizable face to people who are familiar with the culture that all this exists in. And
yeah,
it's to me, that's fascinating, because, like, we're going for very specific characters we know, and yet they're being played by people who are completely outside of the context we know, but obviously will affect the way the show itself is viewed. And it's like, makes it quite a juggling act, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they're not all, like, TV or movie heavy hitters, like Kenji Urai, who plays Kitariano, my favorite character this time around. Before this, he'd basically done no TV and minimal voice acting, and was mostly a Shakespeare actor for theater before this, which makes sense given his theatricality throughout the show.
But yeah, it's definitely.
It's interesting how there is like a pretty small ecosystem of voice actors. I mean, get used to seeing, you know, I'm just blanking on voice actor names. We get used to seeing Miyuki Sawashiro or something in, like, an anime every single season. But, like, some of these people are movie stars. Some of these people are voice actors. Some of these people are theater stars. Some seem kind of like nobodies, or just kind of like low level actors. It's always hard to tell, because I'm much less plugged into the live action scene. But yeah, it's a vast and strange cast. So, and we'll talk more about certain exceptionally strange ones later. But for now, how did you first come on to Aoi Hono, and how'd you react to it? I'm sure the same as us, but
you guys to blame that for me. Like, it's like, I think during the early years where torrenting was a thing, you'd because I was reading a lot of manga, but not that. And there's surprisingly a decent amount were getting made into J dramas, things like Ping Pong, and so I'd watch those, because to see how my beloved manga were getting made, partly because often the translations weren't up to date and I could get the full story, and gave me a sort of vague palette for J dramas. And so when you started seeing this talked about and screenshots and stuff, and it's like, yeah, I can give that a go. And I find it very entertaining. Like, you're spot on in saying that it is wildly funny at times. And, like, we as a podcast definitely have a weakness for shows that are quite happy to have characters who examine their younger selves and find them deeply wanting. And this is definitely one of those.
I was a former gifted student in college, and so it is very hard not to sympathize with what Hono is going through, specifically certain things like overestimating his own ability to do stuff because he's ignorant and assumes that he knows everything he's about to do. And then other people are like, oh, wow, you're going to do a whole anime by yourself in a week? And he's like, yeah, I'm working really hard on the concept because the concept's the most important thing. And tell me if you haven't heard that from some bullshitter in your life, probably when you were younger and stranger.
Yep.
But
yeah.
But even when he does like achieve stuff, when he makes that his like super hyper animation referential short for the first picture show later on, he also like he's sitting there being like, please nothing be better than my stuff. Please nothing be better than my stuff. He just can't. The level of creative vulnerability and yet like height of self opinion is very intense. And to watch him like apply that all over to like look at Anno and be like, oh, he's a fake. He just knows production names. He has no talent. He has no potential. Or to like the thing that kind of like hit hardest at the end, where he like is explaining to one of his closest friends, Suda, who obviously has a crush on him, that like the short-haired girls never get the guy in the end. And then he just this unhinged rant where he talks about the invention of the medium length haired girl. And
yeah.
Then like turns to her to like do more psychotic ranting, and she's just gone, and she never shows up again, and just chased off someone in his life because he can't. All the characters in this show suffer from using manga and anime and tokusatsu films as like moral lessons for life and lessons for like social mores. But like the way that we specifically see how his just like inability to appreciate anyone else's opinion and his constant self-regard combined with like his lack of talent and his like excuses about how like, oh, manga, like sloppy, poorly driven manga is really in right now. So actually, if I were to get better at my technical skills, that would make me less viable as a creator. And it's like, what are you talking about, dude?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very real.
And the moment he starts getting actual recognition and starts getting pushed, you know, higher and higher, he's like, oh no, I have to compete with these other people who I actually respect. I don't want to do that. This is the most terrifying thing I can imagine.
He's talking about the two different awards. I can't remember, Shonen Sunday scene. and a monthly Shonen one as well.
Yeah.
And one of them is like for amateurs and the others is for aspiring young pros, and he's like, no, put me with the amateurs, don't put me with the pros, I don't want that pressure, I'd rather be the big fish in the small pond. And yeah, that's very relatable, like being like going from to want to go and do arts, you have to be relatively good at arts. And so you've probably spent most of your teenage and beyond years, people going, wow, your art's really good. Just as Tonko is always doing to Hono. And then you go into a classroom and you look at the other people and you're like, he can achieve effortlessly what I spend hours on. Motherfucker.
he must have something wrong with him that makes him worse than me. Just the constant like the only Kataro Yano scene on YouTube is his best, where he just kicks in his door and is like, I heard you saw Anno's anime. Every person he does the whole like char quotes while the Char's theme plays in the background, but he's like, yeah, you have to like, even if you know that you're defeated as your own like psychological nation, you have to defend your borders against any assault. It's true that he can't, like, in Tonko has him down pat, where she's just like, oh, you lie a lot. You mostly make excuses for yourself. It's not great. And he's like, what does Tonko know? She's in love with me. She doesn't even know what she's talking about. But I do like that. Like, I kind of saw her as just a misguided love interest the first couple times I saw her. But this time, like, she's just trying to get him to like do the stuff he's talking about doing. When he finally submits something to Mad Holy, who is now and forever Jeff's favorite character. Mad Holy, the weird, like, Hokuto no Ken, sweaty, absolutely bizarre improv performance guy, who plays an editor at Shokugan, I think. When he finally turns into manuscript, she's like, I'm just so glad that you finally like did something. And you like, yeah, you made a manga. And he's like, oh, what does Tonko think? And he constantly treats Suda bad because he respects Tonko. And then when he meets Wonder Masumi, he's like, oh, this girl's totally in love with me, I've got to break up with Tonko. And it's like, dude, she, yeah, it's, it, the way that we like constantly lie to ourselves and the loneliness that that creates is kind of the psychological theme here. And I have a whole paragraph that I'm of notes I wrote up about like the motifs of loneliness and like this desire to be isolated socially so that you can achieve creatively, and how that's a trap that like young creators to continually throw themselves into. And we see with the Gainax people, especially with Yamaga and his meal tickets, that like, I don't know, greatness is other people, and like you achieve the most if you are surrounded by people who can help you. And his like insistence on trying to prove himself, when we know from his inner monologue that he's constantly beset with these self-doubts about his own talent, and has to lie to other people to reassure himself that he is. I don't know. It's a lot better writing than I remembered it being when I was younger and just being like, oh, all these references, and oh my god, yeah. It's the guys who made Evangelion and blah 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 blah. That there is just this like story of how like of like the mistakes, and that's the title, The Blue Blazes. We'd probably translate today as like The Cringe or something, where he's got this like self-consuming passion that he like can't direct towards anything because he's just too far up his own ass, yeah. Absolute just dingbat.
I mean, before I forget about it, Blue Blazes is partly a tribute to the first manga he got serialized, which is Blazing Transfer Student, which is the idea we see him putting out of someone transferring into a school where all disputes are settled by fighting, which was just,
and
like,
you never go inside the school so that he doesn't have to draw desks. Whole half an episode was like, it's like, fuck, I can't draw. I'm not good enough to draw the concept I've come up with. He painstakingly came up with.
Yeah. Just like, you know, confronted with the possibility of hard work, and he's like, no, it's such a pain in the ass. I can't do it. Again, a very relatable impulse.
Self-destruction. Yeah.
Like, you have the phrase necessity is the mother of invention, but I think also laziness is also a mother of a different kind of invention.
Yeah, yeah. And he has so much esteem for himself, but it's because of his genre savvy, which he uses to like push away people. And like, there's a scene when he's like trying to walk like Harlock, and then of course Anno, Akai, and Yamaga come around the corner, and Yamaga's like, "What's he doing?" And Anno's like, "Oh, he's walking like Harlock, but this is how you walk like Harlock." And then they all like take turns doing their own one, and he looks at them, and he's like, "What a bunch of posers," as if he wasn't the one who was like trying to act like an anime character to cheer himself up. But he has this genre savvy that he constantly uses to like push away other people and to like manufacture excuses. And the ways that he tries to like take shortcuts by using his genre savvy to like cut out work that he doesn't want to have to do, like when he's like, I've got a great idea, I'm gonna make a gag manga, but I'm gonna draw it in a really realistic style. And he's like really like chuffed about that for a whole episode. And then Kataro Yano shows up on a bike, which is apparently a reference to how much he loves biking and like had this very iconic red or green bike while he was at Osaka. He comes up and's like, that's already been done by a better author. And he's and like Anno Hono abandons it. Too many names that sound superficial. Hono abandons it immediately. He's just like, fuck, well, that's if someone else has already done it, then there's no point in me doing it. As if, like, that's what creativity is. Coming up with your best Jaws meets Paws elevator pitch. It's
the whole, like, first half of the show is basically him just looking for a silver bullet to solve all of his problems. You know, you see him latching on to the idea that, oh, you just have to have a cute catchphrase that the character always says, and people will instantly connect to your work. And then he sees it spreading to other mangas, and he's like, my god, it's already catching on, it's too late for me. And his
condescending way of worrying, like, oh no, now Adachi Mitsuru is not going to be recognized for coming up with the idea of having a cute catchphrase. but go on.
And the you know, him backing himself into a corner of, you know, either finishing his anime for school or ego death, because he has basically like destroyed, you know, he's burned all of his bridges, he's, you know, on the verge of giving up on manga, and he actually puts in the work to do the anime and comes back to his manga and says, hey, doing a bunch of hard work made me better at the thing I'm doing right now. And I have a better appreciation for production. And I have a better sense of how I can plan things out. That's weird.
Yeah, telling his editor, he's like, wow, I actually got better when I actually started drawing instead of laying on my bed thinking about like the perfect concept, which I thought was the hard part, but actually it's the easy part. And I just told myself it was hard because it's what I wanted to do instead of actually working.
I'm unsure if this is the right point to go into it or not, but related to him diving into his bed, how do we feel about the ending?
Oh, you mean the flash forward?
It was all a flashback all along.
Well, he was avoiding work, hilariously.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that is the, you know, the adventure continues ending, because like Ben said, the manga is still in production now, and so if it time jumps forward into his actual manga career, you know, that makes sense as like maybe, you know, either dangling the possibility of a sequel or enticing you to move on to the manga. But
that old hook.
This feels fairly self-contained as a series. Like, that's one nice thing about this adaptation, that is that you don't need to have an appreciation even for the subject matter, really. It is like a very just solid show. It doesn't feel like a commercial, like a lot of adaptations these days now do, unfortunately, despite having, you know, objectively better production values than a lot of the things that they are depicting, you know, the roots of in this show, ironically.
Yeah, and for me it was interesting because it's kind of like we've had however many episodes of him being a university daydreamer, and he's dreaming about what he will achieve as an adult, and maybe one day he can have his debut, and then we switch to him daydreaming about being a student when he's an adult, and is actually his job is being that, and it's kind of a certain amount of grass is always greener going on.
Yeah, and honestly, the fact that, to go back to kind of like my like loneliness and like creative isolation by someone who wants to like become a great artist through sheer will, like the ending credits are him just like walking alone until he walks off into the distance. And then the final episode, like all the characters in their manga forms are like there waiting for him. And it is kind of like, yeah, it's a return. It's a recognition that he wasn't alone, that like that even just inventing out of whole cloth a rivalry with Hideki Anno that obviously like was not there, because when he finally wins the award, Anno comes by and he's like, yeah, it doesn't feel as good as you thought it would. Anyway, sign my book. we kind of realized that, he didn't have rivals and like trifling interactions. He had a support network that he like disdained and looked down upon, and that there is almost a potential for a different history where during that first animation, he didn't sneer at the idea of collaboration and like actually got on board with stuff. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, like these people do play an important part in his creative development, and that like in some ways, Anno and the Gainax bunch were the best kind of example, because they forced him to like do actual things instead of the bullshit, like trying to get his driver's license to prove that he's better than Hideki Anno. Which has a great Yasuhiro Takeda cameo as the cowboy guy, as the driving instructor, who just freaks out at him the whole time. Good and stuff, yet, and good cameos.
And yet, getting his driver's license was kind of the beginning of his turn of like actually committing to doing something and finishing it despite running into setbacks. And also, of course, that entire episode being him just humiliating himself while simultaneously denying that he is doing so. You know, there's the cute girl who is, you know, in the class with him, and he gets ahead of her and she's like, oh, you know, I'll see you there. You know, I hope you're doing well. And then she ends up graduating before him, and she just kind of looks at him like he's scum, and he's like, no. Like, I'm sort of jealous of having the confidence to go back into your own history and just lampoon yourself so harshly and so heinously and so shamelessly of just look how stupid and idiot, look like an idiot I was, you know, look at, get a load of this guy. And it's like,
I failed my driver's test on purpose because I thought that Captain Okita from Yamato would look down on me for turning away from a head-on collision with a bulldozer. And it's just like, yeah, oof.
Yep.
It is a very like self-effacing, and honestly, like to go back to the cameos, because we have Rumiko Takahashi as the shop clerk who wants to him to explain Ideon and then makes fun of him when she's like, you look like a total loser and you can't even explain Ideon. Like, oh, good job, dude. What are you doing with your life? And yeah, Yamaga as the wait staff when fictional Yamaga passes out. Akai as the bathhouse attendant in drag. There's a lot of really cool cameos, and all of them are pretty like humble and self-effacing when it comes to them playing either like just normies who don't get the like otaku lifestyle or just absolute weirdos. Like even Toshi Okada playing Tezuka when Tezuka called them to the mat to be like, you didn't reference any of my works in Daikon 3. I hope you'll fix that for the next time. Which I'm sad that, according to Notenki Memoirs, Yasuhiro Takeda's autobiography, Yamaga was even weirder because he like explained he didn't recognize who Tezuka was, obviously, and he decided to like spell out his name like you would to a child, where he's like Yama, like mountain, and like put his hands over his head in a peak, and like they were all like really humiliated that he was like, oh, this old guy wants to talk to us. Well, I guess I'll make sure that he knows what my name is. And of course, that turned out that it was one of the names that Tezuka remembered because he'd been such a dick unconsciously. I don't know. It's hard to like characterize who Yamaga is in this show because he looks like just a complete leech of a human being, even though he does kind of like pull his weight in some ways.
It's interesting that Yamaga is portrayed as such a self-consciously, creatively bankrupt person, and yet he goes on to direct a fair few works for Gainax, like ones which we will have discussed, Winds of Hominese. How would we pronounce that?
Honemies. That's why I always say I've given up trying.
Yeah.
Winds of Honemies. Probably the most time we spent talking about it is he's responsible for a magical shopping arcade, Abeno Bashi, which is another very otaku focused work, and it's surprising when you look back at the whole of Gainax's catalog how many works they ended up doing which focus on this idea of the pursuits of the otaku, and their most iconic works stand out as exceptions rather than the rule. It's like,
yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out with the incorporation of Gainax in 1985 and its eventual merger with General Products, which was the like subsidiary of Okada Toshio's parents' counterfeit embroidering business. Gainax was always founded as like by otaku for otaku, and like kind of what made it have so many financial troubles that are dramatized very strangely in Otaku no Video, the 1991 OVA that we'll be speaking about almost certainly a little bit, is because it wanted to be like this one-stop otaku super shop where you can get models and merch and games and anime and manga and fanzines, and it just meant that they had that every single like sub industry they went in almost Hono like they went in assuming that because they were fans of it they would be good at making it, and then they would spend like five times the money and twice the personnel figuring out why the professionals all do it the way they already do it, and then either abandon the lesson or fold it into the more successful parts of the company. It's very easy to kind of have this like ascended super fan impression of Gainax. And I think it's one that they both cultivated and bought into themselves, but there are a lot of bumps there, that I wonder if by virtue of Shimamoto being an outsider, he doesn't really depict in Aoi Hono, that there was all these issues with Akai wanting to do one thing, Yamaga's pragmatism, Anno's lack of interest in anything but the art. But it is interesting that this is like this flourishing of otaku and this assumption that like just otakuness is in the air, and like the great scene of Anno trying to force Yamaga's little sister to watch Gundam as a mark of his hospitality, which is, I think, I made my own like handmade meme of him like, well, we can watch some Gundam. And she's like, what's Gundam? And he's like, you are Yamaga's sister. it's interesting because Gainax is absolutely famous. It's one of the studios that people are, well, maybe not anymore because they died and got split up and Anno's at Kara and whatever. But at least at the time that this came out, Gainax was one of the most famous studio on the planet, and to see them as just a bunch of weirdos walking around in cosplay at college is kind of enlightening for like where this stuff comes from at the same time as it's kind of over mythologizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of over mythologizing, I was about to make a comparison to like one of the, you know, one of the old pantheons of gods where you have a father figure who is then subsequently destroyed and chopped up and made into the world, into the subsequent gods. You know, Gainax similarly has split up into a million.
Of Gainax. Yeah.
Yeah. As being this like, you know, this origin, but also this corpse that everything else is sort of growing off of. And it's the show also has kind of an interesting relationship to the process of making art, in that basically every artist is depicted as either being like afflicted by their art or in some way trapped by it. Like Yano proudly declaring that if he does not make it as a manga artist, he is doomed. And that is what drives him forward. You know, similarly, Hono, you know, his entire self-regard is tied up in success in his work. Nothing else will, you know, he basically almost has, you know, a personality collapse when he doesn't get a huge pop off for his anime that he made for the film festival. And then you get Anno, who is, you know, definitely has a special interest in doing this kind of art. He's depicted as, you know, doing anime to relax and just churning out work almost to a, you know, an obsessive degree, whereas the supporting staff like Yamaga, like the various editors that Hono encounters in Tokyo, they're all depicted as simultaneously, you know, saboteurs and leeches, but also essential to the artist's ability to be published. And, you know, what you're, like you were saying with the jump forward, he is still in a position where, you know, the art is afflicting him. You know, there's crisis all around him. He has to get himself into a place where he's even more under the gun. You know, we have 3 hours until the deadline. It's like, all right, contact me in 2 hours and I'll have the juice to do this.
Yeah. And the only thing that you can hope is that he's, that the experience that like taught him what he actually can do versus what he hopes he can do based on how much of a huge nerd he is. You have to hope that he knows he can do this in 2 hours, or maybe not. Maybe we're just shown that like, the child is the father to the man, so to speak.
Yeah. But there's also the moment when they're in Tokyo and their meeting is pushed back by like several hours because one of their established artists at the magazine is behind schedule and everybody is, you know, turning over their entire schedule to get that guy over the line. And all they could think of is, we're helping this established artist get his work done. We're already part of the manga industry.
And then they decide to go like is it Kichan or Take? I think it's Kichan's comics. Like they go to ink them in a cafe because he knows that that's what someone else does. And then finds it's like, oh wow, it's actually kind of uncomfortable to like take up a whole table in a cafe and buy nothing and be inking these pages. This constant like imitation of success, imitation of it. Like, yeah, it's an interesting counterpoint. This like feeling of belonging and this feeling of imitation and this like lineage and Hono thinking that he can give advice to Mitsuru Adachi about when he's like, he does some good manga, but he's not quite there. He like, there's some incompatibility between his romance and his sports anime. And then when he has the end of, I forget which one, but the end of one of Adachi's manga where he like, they don't win Koshien.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's the end of the story. We didn't win. And he's like, what a bad ending. What an awful ending. It didn't give me anything I wanted. And so just like this kind of feeling of like they're in conversation with, in decision to like isolate themselves from their peers and instead being in constant conversation with and in imitation of these figures who they don't know, but they're certain they know because they've consumed all their works. Very like proto parasocial. I don't know. It does speak a lot to this kind of like first blooming of like adult creative potential. which is counterbalanced by just how like incredibly immature everybody, but especially Hono himself is. And just at the end when he's like, oh, I got slightly negative feedback from my editor. I'm going to give up manga and just like date a girl and have a great college career. And then just goes to every girl in his life to like, will you date me? Oh, you weren't even interested. Will you date me? Oh, you have a gross new boyfriend. And will you date me? Oh, I can't even find out where you are. It's very fictional, a very fictive way of making social connections.
In terms of the love interests, Tonko and Tsuda, I found like it feels like as a viewer, it's immediately obvious that Tonko's not interested in him, his oblivious to it is kind of like your first clue into how oblivious he is in general. Like they use his complete blinkered view on that and only hears what he wants to from her, doesn't actually hear the parts where she's being perfectly clear. Like as you say, like when you pay more attention to what Tonko's saying, like she's a far more coherent character than you might think in watching it at first.
And yeah, she's like, just his friend. Yeah. And he doesn't know how to do that because he doesn't want to have friends because he thinks that makes him weak. The opposite of shonen anime.
But we learned by the end that human bonds are what make the dream work.
the only moral that ever exists.
Yep.
Well, do we want to move on to Otaku no Video? We can focus more on, like, part of this is, yes, like the life cycle of the young creative asshole, but partially it's also about genres loving to comment on themselves.
Yeah.
And I do feel fortunate that we do have Otaku no Video that picks up literally right after Aoi Hono ends, and that we have this further like biography / autobiography of Gainax, and this further depiction of how it was to be an otaku when things really started getting excited after Mobile Suit Gundam came out, and the Yamato movies were really popping off. But it also is a very revisionist. It's not like it doesn't have the laurels of realism that something like Shirobako might. It's much more like Animation Runner Kuromi in terms of just like, let's make animes look wacky and fun and let's show how these people are. So yeah, this is a two-part OVA written by Okada Toshio on the occasion of one of their big conventions. And shortly after this, he resigned from Gainax amid increasing criticisms of his leadership as president. And so it's kind of a final vindication of the otaku in the 1980s and the vision of Gainax as a company. And it's divisive.
that's one way of putting it. Like, one of the strange little accidents of history is that in May 1991, Gainax adapted Blazing Transfer Student.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And later that year, we have this, Attack on a Video, which is a, as you say, a very strange production indeed. Like, it's... the thing I think in my memory, it was far more animated than it actually turns out to be, because one of its little quirks is it has interviews with otakus. And I think in my memory, those were like a tenth of it, when in fact, they're probably a good half the running time. And
it's a good way to cut costs.
Yeah.
Live action segments. Yeah.
And so I think we last discussed it on the episode we talked about Abenobashi, and we were talking about early Gainax stuff. And it is that strange mix of a first half of an OVA where you have a at least based in reality story of the origins of Gainax, to its second half where it very much starts to become like almost speculative propaganda is the best way I can describe it.
All propaganda is speculative. Yes. I get the point.
I think knowing more now about that cast of people who made up Gainax kind of offers these weird insights into what this film is talking about, which I didn't necessarily have the first time I watched it. It's like, as you're saying, Gainax was such a huge presence, like, oh, you've watched Evangelion? Oh, you better watch everything else this studio has been put out at. And so you watch all these random films and you watch this one, and you're like, okay, this is strange. They're interviewing people. I don't really get it. I don't get these references. And now, a good decade later, it's like, okay, I get these references and I feel a lot worse about it. I'm not sure if that's intentional or unintentional. But the one which I got this time, which I hadn't got before, was one thing we find out in iHono is that one of the founders of Gainax has a fallout shelter in his mansion, and has a little chat with Anno about how he kind of does believe in the Nostradamus's prophecies, and that there's going to be, surely one day there will be like a nuclear war. And the weird culmination of Attack on Ovidio is that suddenly there's a side of black slide, which they've been throwing out throughout as just like the historic markers of the show, which says the nuclear waste dump on the far side of the moon blew up, and that was the end of the world in 1999. And it's like, okay, he's consistent. Like he truly does believe in this, and he's gonna work it into the plot of his self propaganda.
Yeah, it is worth pointing out that Nostradamus was really popular in Japan, because it seemed like he was predicting a lot of the big earthquakes they were getting hit with. So yeah, like there, I'll share it. But there's a Guardian article from 1999 about like the fad of Nostradamus books in Japan because of its especially because of earthquakes. But yeah, it definitely like paints Okada as extremely eccentric, especially when they're trying to explain to him that like it's illegal to counterfeit, and he's like, no, we put our own name below it and we change the position of the alligator, like, but it's a third as much, like people will appreciate the discount. And it's just like, oh, kind of a foreshadowing of how garage kits played out. Yeah. Too.
Yeah, having a discussion back and forth that like, yeah, we can just copy things. Yeah, why not? Look, we'll just take people's sculpts, we'll copy them, and then we'll sell them. What's wrong
with
that?
And then you get forced out of your company for no reason because your best friend betrayed you, and your bitch of an ex-girlfriend is dating a banker now who bought your company just to screw you over.
It's the plot twists. Like, it's just like randomly throws in his ex marrying the banker. And like he has like a random rant against her, saying like, oh, I'm gonna prove her wrong, and it's like, oh no, you proved her right, oh no. And it's like, oh,
it's okay, they'll make another company that's the exact same company, but this one will outcompete the other company, and then they'll build a theme park that turns into a starship that will leave this world with its insufficient appreciation of otaku. Yeah, it's hard not to be cynical about a Otaku no Video. I always appreciate the dynamic of reference-heavy shows. Like, I've loved Sarno Zetsubou Sensei since the moment I saw it. And part of that is the mystery of like, oh, look at all these references. Look at all these characters. And like, obviously from the way the camera treats them, from the way the animation lavishes lines and movement on them, that they're in reference to something. And it's always kind of sad when you come back after having grown a bit. This is something that happens with any work, that you can grow a bit and not relate. But when you come back and specifically you're like, oh, I get all the references, and it's just, they're just lines from Gundam and someone dressing up as a character from Space Cobra. Like, oh, it's the meaning is it's a puddle an inch deep, and there's not that much to it. And I was relieved and gratified that Aoi Hono, I think when I got the references, when I like, now that I know a lot more about Gundam, the way that everyone's just constantly saying Gundam lines to each other, and like anyone who's not in on the joke is like, what's that mean? What are you saying? That didn't make any sense. And just the way that like Yano ends every interaction with some random char line, like it's three times as fast, or just like bizarre nonsense that like has the energy. Like that's the better reference, because it has the energy, but it reflects a relationship, versus like every single time Otaku no Video pans over a spread of like, oh lol, it's an alien from Aliens. Oh lol, it's Lum. Oh, it's Yamato. It's that char line that they use like four times in the OVA. It kind of becomes a bit more deflating. And to find out that the interviews with the otaku, which are part of this like rehabilitative effort to like distance otaku culture as a whole from the otaku murders that had just happened in 1989, to hear that all of them were scripted, and the ones that weren't scripted were by a Gainax employee and an American guy who got his answers dubbed over with joke answers. It's kind of, I don't know. I don't know why this was made, but I think that generally is a problem with Toshio Okada's tenure in Gainax and perhaps his entire life until he finally gets to become an academic where you're paid to be an argumentative bullshitter. And he's done great there. And I love reading his works once he like starts writing like academic stuff. But when he's just showing up at meetings in Gainax to be like, what if it was this way? And people are like, well, we can't do that. That's too much money. And he's like, yeah, but what if it was? Like, I don't know. I'm not surprised that this is the outcome, having heard about him in Natenki memoirs and Aoi Hono and elsewhere.
I wonder if that anecdote about him wanting to have a certain thing show up in as a logo in the Daikon opening is true or not, because
it's true. It's 100% true. It's verified by multiple sources, and that in fact his girlfriend came in and was like, if you're gonna do that, you might as well make them have a speed eating contest with feces. And he's like, it's a good point. Yeah, and that's apparently like that's why his wife was allowed to be so involved in Gainax. His future wife was allowed to be so involved in Gainax is because she was the only person who could like frame counter arguments in a way that would make Okada listen to them, versus being like, oh, this person's like, his degree of conviction that you hear about in Aoi Hono was like an obstacle, because unless you could engage him on his own terms, he just had no interest in your opinion, which made him kind of difficult to work with, as you might imagine. The Ota King.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole that like knowing who the Ota King is makes the whole arc of I'm going to become the Ota King in Attack on No Video very, very strange. In many ways, makes me appreciate Aoi Hono even more, because like as you were saying, Ben, like you can have self-referential jokes, and they're very much in crowd things. That like that's a very teenage thing to like you signify by these little things, you know.
Yeah.
That's a very gatekeeping way. But I think Aoi Hono you can watch with only a smattering of knowledge of what it's talking about and still find it very relatable and very funny.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of that is I think because Aoi Hono shows that how empty and stupid and actually like self-sabotaging the gatekeeping is like. Like, it means you have no friends. It means no one understands what you're doing. It means when you're doing your cool Harlock walk in the hall, like, either people think you're being weird or they have a better Harlock walk than motherfuckers, earning our explicit rating. But I also think that it is just funnier, like, the physical comedy when Anno dives out of the room and, like, hits the door and just gets up and leaves. That's partially, I think, the much more casual way that... Yeah. Japanese live action is filmed. Like there's a scene when Hono comes home and he's like taking off his jacket and he gets his like his arms stuck in it and he's just like waving them frantically to try to get the jacket off. Like we've been there. Very few pieces of audiovisual media capture getting trapped inside your jacket when you want to do something really quick. So there's like strong physical comedy accompanying that.
I loved Mad Hori throwing his phone and missing and then like scrambling to put it back.
Just have a tag on this podcast that's like Mad Holy segment and a time code, so you can just talk about all the weird things he does, like every weird pause, holding his phone upside down so that his mouth is nowhere near the speaker, the multiple times he falls asleep mid-sentence. It's like sharks sleep while they're swimming.
the physical performance of Yuya Yagira, because so much of the show is inside Hano's head, but you can't just kind of pan over still frames or anything. So he'll be in the middle of a conversation with somebody, and then he'll go into this internal monologue when he's debating with himself whether or not to explain why the 009 intro is so good to Suda. And he's going back and forth, but physically he is like looming over her and his face is like contorted, like he is, you know, in sheer bliss and agony at the same time, and she's just kind of like moving away from him and he's just on the verge of like going insane while he's doing this extremely nerdy like summation of like what is so great about this this OP, and that physical performance of him just, you know, writhing around in bed and climbing the walls and, like you were saying, you know, struggling to get out of his jacket while he's, you know, to maintain his like hot blood to keep drawing, like that physical performance on its own is fantastic. And the performance of Anno doing the, you know, crashing to the ground like Ultraman, and, you know, that the commitment, and it, and you were saying, like, you know, flying away like he's Ultraman out the door, crashing into it, and then getting up and running out, like, that looked like it hurt. That did not look like he did that on purpose. And Yamaga, like, getting up and checking to make sure the set is okay, you know, completely ad-libbed, but, like, just, like, the physical commitment to the bits in this show are very, very good, and managed to carry, like, what would, you know, often be, you know, kind of awkward moments very famously.
Yeah, it's, I think occasionally, I don't know if you guys have this experience, but you're watching something and then you have like the sudden inversion where you're like, this is an actor performing in front of a camera, and like the camera is like 6 inches from their face. And that happened to me during one of Yamaga's like meal ticket inner monologues, where he just like, I like thought briefly, like, the voiceover's not there when he's doing these facial expressions. So it's just him like freezing and like slowly like opening his mouth and snapping his head suddenly and like doing these like whips. And oftentimes like the other actors are there like having to like look at him and hold a straight face while he's just like completely flipping out about how he's never going to miss a meal again if he keeps around these people. And there is one moment, I think it's the first time, that Suda is like slapping him on the back and keeps going for about 30 seconds of just slapping him on the back over and over. And like, and I think you see Yagura break, but he like turns it quickly into like kind of like a smug, like smile, but he's like trying not to laugh because she's just, it seems like maybe he didn't know that was going to happen. And he's just like, what the fuck? After I didn't practice this line while she's just slapping me on the back over and over and over. It feels like the actors are having fun. Like, that's a very common praise, but like, it means it's infectious. It makes it feel a lot more collegey, that everybody's just doing ridiculous things. Every time Tonko talks to him before she gets her contacts, and he's just like slams up to 3 inches away to like talk. And like, I mean, I'm not as good an actor as anybody in this show, probably the cameos included, but not breaking when like a girl like literally almost touches noses with you to like talk about, I can only see you if you're this far away. And it's just like, oh, okay, cool. So like, does she even like, when he hands her his manuscripts, can she even make out anything? I don't know. It's a very lively show. That sounds like faint praise, but like everybody has to do crazy stuff. And like people make big swings that get in the cut. Like, when Yano verbally assaults Hono in his dorm room and says a bunch of char lines, and he's laughing. He's like, oh, ha, ha. And he like starts like working his jaw while he's like, oh, ha, 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 and stuff. It's, everyone's making big swings. It means that no one is like left behind or ruins the scene with less energy. And it's, I don't know, it makes it a lot more fun. Well, I do think Otaku no Video has the same kind of like big opinion of itself, but it definitely is a man in his 30s trying to say all my decisions were correct and the world screwed me. And also Otaku are pretty cool. And I agree with 1.2 of those propositions overall. Yeah. But then again, like Otaku no Video also like, and this is the case with Gabinobashi too, like kind of sees Otaku as pathetic. And like, while it's saying like these people aren't dangerous, it's saying like, these people aren't anything. Like, why are you even paying attention to them? More or less. And like, they are all like emotionally damaged, socially isolated weirdos.
I originally suggested we do Attack on Titan Video as like a companion to Oihana, but I haven't done it. I'm now like, no, that was wrong. Like, before I tell you what I think was right, what do you two think is would be a good like companion piece for Oihana?
Like, it's hard not to just go to like basic like Bakuman, Shirobako,
Shirobako's a good call.
Industry procedural dramas. Like, if I were to say anything, it would not be anime. It would just be to like read the Notenki memoirs, which I don't even know if that's in print anymore. because it's published by ADV Manga, and that does not exist as an entity. But that's a, yeah, it's weird to read Yasuhiro Takeda as a very normal, like, trying to keep the peace feel with all the Gainax people. And it's weird to realize that he's dressed as a cowboy because he did a tokusatsu fan film where a guy transforms into a big gringo cowboy instead of into Ultraman. And so they have him dressed as a character from a show he wouldn't make until 4 years from now. But yeah, I do think that I'm thinking of it more in a historical point of view. I'm sure you're thinking of a more like thematic overlap.
And anything for you, Jeff?
I'm going to say Tatami Galaxy.
Ah, you got me then. In terms of like the perfect,
in terms of Blue Blazing,
incredibly self-censured man lurching from delusion to delusion, it's the perfect choice.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, either that or Welcome to the NHK.
Oh yeah, I guess that like that's the.
If you want to wallow in the patheticness of otaku,
yeah, only the Abe no Seimi scenes from Abino Bashi are my answer. Where he's hanging out in his like mystical like hikikomori shack,
basically Oda King's house.
Yeah.
When otaku made their own other worlds rather than got transported to them.
Is there, it feels like there should be at least a light novel of like someone who gets like, I guess I'm just talking about 16-bit sensation, yeah. But like someone who gets teleported back to be a modern otaku, who gets teleported to being an otaku in the 90s seems like a pretty fertile ground.
So that's 16-bit sensation?
But without aliens, yeah. This time.
Without aliens.
It's my caveat. No aliens in otaku, no video, thankfully. Yeah.
Does Steins Gate count? I don't know.
I mean, otaku love to make videos about themselves, but they love to see themselves as grander, which is why these ones where otaku are pathetic and social outcasts and their own worst enemies is at least interesting in hindsight now that the role of otaku in Japanese society is much more secure than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago.
I feel like Genshiken used to be a big part of like the anime canon, and it's feel like it's completely like disappeared from that in recent times.
Just, I think it's just old, unfortunately.
Well, some old shows last, some don't, and that's one which kind of has just gone.
And I do love that one, and I've said many times before that one of my favorite parts of it is that the president in the first corps is actually a grad student who's writing a dissertation on like the anthropology of otaku, and he's got these amazing like Japanese academia chapter headings that are used as the episode titles, and then they lose that conceit. And also apologies to any big Genshiken fans, but I do think it's just kind of a slow decline in quality, and once we're at Nidaime, I'm more there because Madarame is funny than because I feel like it's like a good portrait of how it was to be an otaku in the mid to late 90s. But yeah, it's good. I mean, I love Genshiken, and sometimes I think about rewatching it, but then I just rewatch the Kamiket episode where Madarame breaks his hand, because that's one of the best episodes of anime ever made, in my opinion. Any anime where they go to Kamiket is automatically an otaku anime, though, so yeah.
I guess like the most recent like otaku anime I can think of might be something like My Dress-Up Darling, which is because the moment you said going to Comic-Con, like I thought of them getting ready and their cosplays to head there, and that's a very, very different. I mean, he's still a socially incompetent nerd with an obsession for dolls. That's consistent at least.
But now there's a cool girl,
yeah.
Which I guess is the case in Genshiken too. There's like a non-otaku cool girl, but yeah. It's the dream.
What if a girl liked you and she also liked your weird obsessions?
At least tolerated your weird obsessions, if not fully embraced them.
Maybe the last thing to mention is like Insufficient Direction also exists, which is Miyoko Anno's manga about her and Hideki Anno, and that's strange because partly because she her own self-insert character is someone in like a romper suit.
Yeah, that's one I get judged for a lot when my girlfriend is like, why is the relationship between a grown man and a baby? I'm like, oh, well, it's both of their author inserts. And she's like, why is her author insert a baby? You can't really give a strong answer to that.
I mean, I think that's, you know, it's the same reason that the author of Aoi Haono's insert is a pathetic weirdo. It's that just
he was once a baby. Yeah. Just that sort of thing.
Or just the, you know, the feeling of inadequacy and then just owning that and making that part of the thing that gives you the foundation to keep going forward as a creative, that you have to have some degree of delusion counterweighted with some degree of self-awareness. And it's when you find that balance that you're able to move forward, which is also more or less what Aoi Haono is about. You know, with Gainax, it's Yamaga being that counterbalance to the, you know, extreme personalities of everybody else around him. And for Hono, it is, you know, finally finding outward gratification and realizing, you know, that hard work actually has a purpose beyond, you know, something that you could be smart for avoiding.
I guess part of why she does what she does with drawing herself as a baby is like part of the what it explores is the idea, like, she's trying to understand her husband's obsessions, and like it's kind of like I'm a baby otaku. I'm not the full grown otaku that he is. It's very self-deprecating to put herself like that and to judge herself on his terms. Like, it's like he takes it so seriously. Like, this has value. I have to see this stuff as value, and I have to see my ignorance of it as being a fault, and trying to reconcile that.
Yeah, I've struggled to see if Haono or if Haono, I did it this time, has ever publicly said how he feels about either this work or Insufficient Direction. And it's very difficult because they are both, you know, depictions of him using his real name. So anytime you try to Google that, it's just results the actual thing. And I, as far as I can tell, he has never publicly come out and said, I denounce this, I think this is insulting. But the fact that he never shows up in the show, maybe it's just that, how does this line up with the production of the Eva remakes? I don't know. Maybe he was just unavailable at the moment. But the
man probably did not have much time.
and he's a pretty private person, I feel like. Like, even when he does do voice cameos, like in the Eva After the End audio drama, where he plays the like Black King of the Angels when they like have to make a second season of Evangelion in a hurry, is like the premise. Or as the big fat cat in Fooly Cooly, he doesn't seem to like want to. It apparently took a lot of convincing, and the fact that it was from Miyazaki himself to have him voice act in The Wind Rises, I think he just doesn't like the spotlight. Because, like, obviously if it really upset Haono, I can't imagine Yamaga and Akai, I can't imagine them being involved. It seems like they all had a pretty good sense of humor about it. And it certainly, I mean, if his wife's drawing him depicting him like that is like a guy who walks around with a Kamen Rider belt on all the time, it's not that different from him walking around with a color timer on his chest all the time. But who knows? It's hard to say. And I feel like he would never say if he found it offensive, so
sensible man.
Stay out of the public eye, especially when people are obsessed with you and think they know your personality, which is really the case with pop culture and Hideki Haono. Closing remarks.
I think I kind of made my closing remark earlier.
Okay, fair enough.
Show is good, watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't often, and unfortunately it's not something that you can easily access. It's not on streaming anywhere. There are a couple of torrents. Sadly, there were Blu-ray director's cuts that had extra footage, especially for the first few episodes. And those are only translated in French, and those torrents are dead. Although I think there's some Daily Motion uploads, but you'd still be reading French subtitles, so it's a wash. It sucks it's hard to watch, but it is definitely, like, if you're interested in, like, the experience of being an otaku in the early 80s, the early history of Gainax, how they went from college students to dropouts to founding one of the most famous anime studios of all time, and one of the most, like, financially fraught and legally fraught anime studios of all time, then it's definitely worth the time there. Great performances. It's the kind of show that will grow with your fandom. Like, I've just got to say again, every single time Kentaro Yano showed up and the Char theme starts playing, and he just lectures him and just calls him a pathetic loser. And even just the moment where he's just like, I've been held back 3 times. If I don't become a manga author, my life is over. And he's like, just the absolute confidence. And hilariously, when he disappears from the series midway through, it's because he got his first publication and became a manga author, mm-hmm. and therefore stops hanging around with noted loser and not manga author Moryu Ano. So yeah, I recommend it. Watch it how you can. If you insist on finding out more, a talking to a video is an option, but I recommend tracking down a copy of the Notenki memoirs, which are a very sober look at how it is to have made the decision to go into business with a bunch of weird nerds who don't know much about money or production or marketing or sales or law.
My final remark is probably that I've just discovered that Blazing Transfer Student exists as a J-drama on Netflix, and so maybe I'll watch that as a follow-up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, let us know. Yeah. I'd like to hear more from him. I think, like, if most of the jokes are from the manga itself, I think he's got a great sense of humor, and his cameo at the end of Blue Blazes, Shimamoto's, it's very humble, where he just kind of gives the young version of himself advice that's useless, and then that's it. Cool. Well, that's been our discussion of Aoi Hono, and to a lesser extent, Otaku no Video, and in general, the experience of otaku culture in the 80s and 90s. Next time, hear us, modern-day Western otaku, talking about the end of the spring anime season. It's been a weird one. There have been a lot of remakes.
Mm.
They've had varying quality.
Mm.
There's a train anime that I like.
Mm.
Find out which one. But yeah, remember, rate and subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. Email us questions at keyframespodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at keyframespod. Find us on Facebook. Search for Keyframes Podcast. And most of all, tell a friend.
Tell a friend who has to make it in a manga or he's doomed.
Oh, say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.